Welcome once again to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The Coaching Perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Glad to be here in studio today, and welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. Do you like sports? Do you like exciting new products? Well, if you do, then you're going to really enjoy today's guest, Todd Brooks from the Brand Amp. But first, I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com, or you can reach me the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Well, here we go. Our guest for today is Todd Brooks, co-founder of the Brand Amp. And he's going to be talking about the impact of disruptive change in mature markets. Boy, when he sent me that title, I almost thought, whoa, wait a minute, we got to rethink this. It sounds boring, but it isn't. It's really exciting. Well, look, Todd has more than 20 years' experience in marketing and public relations. His experience includes Fortune 500 and startup marketing initiatives for brands including Vizio, Toyota, Ford, TaylorMade, Adidas, Golf, Allstate Insurance, DirecTV, Motorola, Nike, among a host of others. The majority of Todd's career has centered on building brands by leveraging sports sponsorship, athletic relationships, and launching sports-related products and services. I didn't think we were going to get the show started today. He and the announcer got into this sporting conversation, I'll tell you. Anyhow, Todd has extensive experience working with professional athletes from Shaquille O'Neal, Peyton Manning, Mike
Krzyzewski.
Yeah, that's okay unless you look at how it's spelled. LeBron James, Oscar De La Hoya, and a host of others. In addition, he's provided crisis communication counsel to corporations and individuals on a host of issues, both international and domestic. Most of Todd's career has been spent serving clients through agency relationships. However, he did serve as director of marketing for Management Plus Enterprises, which at the time had top-tier NBA and NFL talent. Well, if that whets your appetite, sports fans, here we go. Welcome, Todd.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Doug.
Hey, it's great to have you here today. I appreciate you taking the time. Well, look, let's find out a little bit about you before we get into the Brand Amp. Tell us what you did before, what you're doing now. How'd you get here?
Well, it's really been a long ride. I graduated from college with a PR degree, and I got into the workforce thinking my life was over. I worked at a PR firm locally here in Orange County on land use and government relations, and it was not what my passion was. I had grown up sports my whole life. I was able to play sports in college, and I felt like, all right, it's time. My sports career is over. I got to get into the real world. I got to make, you know, what everybody does.
Yeah, let's grow up and get boring.
Exactly. And after about 2 years of that, I was ready to jump out of a window, and I said, I got to get back to what my passion is. And I just started networking and started talking to different people in sports. One thing led to another, and I got a first job with a big global public relations firm that sports marketing practice was based out of Orange County. And that's really what started everything that I've done and how we've been able to create the Brand Amp, and everything was through that initial job, building relationships, doing some really innovative marketing. And then I transitioned over and worked at Management Plus. I'd always kind of wanted to be a sports agent.
Yeah.
And it was an opportunity to work with amazing athletes and really smart people at the highest level of sports. Taught me a tremendous amount, but ultimately realized that my passion was not in working with athletes on that level, kind of on that day-to-day, but leveraging athletes through marketing initiatives for big corporations. And so the agency world made more sense for me.
So you didn't like that show me the money kind of role?
Kind of, well, enjoyed it, but there are some downsides to that also. Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. So interesting story. You know, so many people are in doing things that they didn't start out doing. Mm-hmm. And the question people always ask them is, how'd you find it? And you always hear, follow your passion. And it sounds so trite, but it works.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing for those that are hearing that is, if you have a dream, don't let anybody get in the way. I had wanted to get into advertising in college, and I was told advertising too hard. It's too competitive. It's this, and I went into public relations, and ultimately, it's worked out for me. But I learned a lesson there that was, I'm not going to let anybody tell me I can't do something. And our business that we've grown started out with a co-founder of mine and I. With just the two of us and two desks and nothing. And we learned how to say yes. When people said, can you do this? We would look at them and say, we absolutely can. And we'd go figure out how to do it. And that's produced, you know, the company that we've got today that's grown to be 40 people and works with some unbelievable brands.
Okay, so explain to me the brand amp. What does that mean? How did that come about?
A lot of people ask us, what is brand amp? What does that mean? So if you're into music at all, you know an amplifier is not just about making music loud. It's really about dialing in the unique sound of each artist. Whether you're an individual performer or a band, there's things that you've got that's your own unique sound, and an amplifier really brings that out. We take that approach with brands. We believe every brand has its own unique story in the marketplace. And when you look at the competitive marketplaces that are out there in most cases, it's about people. A lot of times products are very similar, what they can do and perform for you. And so people tend to identify with a brand. They feel like this brand gets me. There's a term called brand projection. You mentioned Nike and the work that we do, or Adidas, yeah, or TaylorMade. You know, people will be out and they'll identify themselves as a TaylorMade guy. You know, you look at Harley Davidson. People are tattooing their body with Harley Davidson because that personifies or embodies who they stand for. And so the branding side of things is so critical in driving sales. And that's what we try and do is we look at a brand, we look at a product, and we say, what is your unique place in the marketplace and how do we tell stories that are going to engage people and want them to look deeper into what you're all about?
Okay. So tell me, who are Brand Amp's clients? How do you get your clients? And what do you do for them that is distinctively different?
Three questions in one. I like that. Our clients are a mix. We have four core practices. They are public relations, social media, events, and promotions and sweepstakes. And within those, we look at all of those as being complementary in a lot of ways. And because we have come up through public relations, we like to do everything that and ensure that it's got some inherent news value. So if we're doing an event, it should generate additional news coverage or social buzz or be able to be trending with YouTube videos or that type of thing. If we're running a promotion or sweepstakes, it should tell a larger story that we can leverage. And who we do it for is a combination of sports and fitness companies like a TaylorMade Golf or a Bell Helmets, consumer electronics companies locally here, Vizio, Mophie, DirecTV. From an event standpoint, those two, consumer electronics, then lifestyle, which is kind of a catch-all for a lot of different brands that we work with. We work with Mattel, with several of their brands in their toy box category.
Okay.
We work with Carhartt Apparel, Red Bull, a number of brands that are lifestyle brands.
I even know most of those.
There you go. Well, hopefully we're doing a decent job. And then we call it mobility, which can get confusing with our consumer electronics work, but it's kind of planes, trains, and automobiles. So we work with Mitsubishi that's located here. We work with Karma Automotive, which is relaunching the Fisker brand.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
We work with a couple of bike companies, Turn Bicycles, which are folding bikes, and Stromer, which is a super high-end electric bike. They sell for between $7,000 and $10,000.
Ooh, haven't seen that one.
And then Icon Aircraft, which is a new light sport aircraft. It's amphibious. It lands on water and it lands on land, and it is an unbelievable piece of machinery.
I hope you're going to talk more about that one later. That one fascinates me. Hey, before we get too far, Todd, in case somebody gets interrupted, and I don't know why they should get interrupted and not hear the show to the end, how do people find out? How do they get a hold of you? Where do they go? Give us
sure.
some of the places to look.
Yep. No, I would go thebrandamp.com is our website, and then all of our Facebook, our social channels, YouTube, Instagram, everything is based there, but they can find us at The Brand Amp on Facebook or Instagram.
Okay. I love your Instagram postings. Who's ever doing it? I'm assuming it's not you.
Charlie is probably taking a bow right now.
Okay,
he would
Charlie,
appreciate the compliment.
I appreciate it. It's great. It's always interesting. Okay, so that's who you do it for.
Mm-hmm.
We've asked every guest we've had on the show this question. What's your guiding principle? What is sacred to you that keeps you sane in the middle of crazy times?
Well, it's challenging in our business because we work a lot in earned media or in social media. In advertising, you know you're going to buy X amount of time, and whatever you produce, it's going to appear. So the challenge for us is we can't tell people, hey, we know we're going to book you on the Today Show, or you're going to be on SportsCenter or in USA Today or Mashable or any of these outlets. What we can tell them is that we've got unbelievable relationships, and we are going to get you answers. And so one of the things that sets us apart is just this mantra internally that we're not going to rest on just sending out an email and praying that somebody calls us back. We're going to be aggressive. We follow up on those emails with phone calls and additional emails, and we try and engage those reporters in conversations that even if they're not really sure, we try and sell them. We really look at ourselves as being in sales, but instead of selling a product for a cash return, we sell to generate stories or to generate buzz around them. So I think our passion, our creativity, and then our relentless drive, we talk about a fear of failure. Everybody's got a healthy fear of failure internally.
Okay. And tell me, is everybody as amped up as you are in your company?
They kind of are. Yeah. We hire a lot of ex-athletes. A lot of people will talk about millennials and a different work ethic and stuff. We have found that a lot of athletes who have had to fight and claw for everything that they've earned and understand the concept of teamwork and putting in the effort to get a result, they've been great employees. So we've got a lot of former college athletes that work with us, and they usually get pretty fired up. Yeah.
Now, I'm assuming that the field you're in, a lot of deadlines, a lot of pressure, not necessarily normal 8 to 5 hours. And yet from what I've seen posted and from conversations I've had with you, because you and I know each other, people seem to love working there. It seemed like a fun place to work. You were telling me about the cupcakes recently for mm-hmm. something. I mean,
yep.
What do you do to make it so much fun?
We've got a lot of really great clients, and they allow us to be creative. And so what it's done for us is certainly we're a for-profit company. We like to be paid for what we do. But our clients let us open our minds and be as creative as we can. And we get to implement programs that people haven't done before. We're kind of breaking new ground. And when you finish it, it's almost like finishing a work of art. You take pride in what you've accomplished because you did something nobody's ever done before, or you get some real strong feedback from social media or from the press that, like, that was the most creative thing I've ever seen. So I think that sense of accomplishment and the ability to be really creative keeps everybody pretty focused and energized.
Do you take the time to celebrate your successes?
Probably not as much as we should.
Okay.
I remember when I started out at that first agency, we would work for a local builder or something, and we'd work for 3 weeks to get ready for a press conference. And we'd have this press conference, and Orange County News and LA Times and Orange County Register would be there. We'd get 3 or 4 media, and afterwards, we would just be like, oh my gosh, look what we accomplished. And we'd relax for 4 or 5 days. At the pace we're going now with the volume of clients we have, we will have 4 or 5 programs going on the Super Bowl right after we have finished being out at CES with 6 or 7 clients at the Consumer Electronics Show after the holiday push.
There really
is no rest for the weary. And it's and it's gotten to the point where when you get off the merry-go-round, it's hard to step back on. You don't even want to stop.
Well, look, I want to hear more. I want to hear more about disruptive change, but our producer's signaling that he's got a commercial ready to go, and we will be right back. Don't go away. Okay, and we're back from commercial with our guest today, Todd Brooks of the Brand Amp. And boy, he's amped up, and it's got me amped up. This has been exciting. Well, look, how do we keep up the excitement level of going from talking about sports and things to the impact of disruptive changes in mature markets? snoozer.
Right.
Come on, come on. Turn it on, Todd. What are you talking about here?
It should be utterly exciting.
Okay, I'm waiting.
All right. So disruptive change is anything that comes into a mature market and changes the game. And what happens, you see it, I mean, a disruptive change can be an economic crisis, the Great Depression. When you look at the companies that were in power, the greatest companies of the time before the Great Depression, and then the companies that were the greatest companies after, it was a tremendous change. And a lot of companies, when we had our setback in 2008,
yes,
the companies that spent money during that time when everybody else was shrinking in marketing, they were the ones that coming out of that recession were poised to take the greatest market growth. And so we look at disruptive changes as an opportunity for brands that maybe aren't the leader in their space to really come in and have substantial growth and change. And the disruptions can be anything. And I'll give a couple of examples if
Please.
That's all right.
Yeah, no, I'd like to hear.
So the first one I'm going to go, this first one goes way back. All right.
Okay.
Back when you were a kid. Just kidding.
I know what you're talking about.
But the golden age of buggies or carriages was 1850 to 1910. And in the United States at that time, there were about 3,000 wagon or buggy manufacturers, 3,000 of them. It was a huge business with big factories. And in 1895, I believe it was, the first patent for the automobile was issued. Okay. Disruptive change. And we talk about this Owensboro Wagon Company out of Pennsylvania. And I can just imagine all of the guys of that time sitting in the boardroom. Somebody had just seen this horseless carriage coming down the road, spewing oil and super loud, scaring horses. And he comes into that boardroom on Monday or whatnot, and he says, I just saw this horseless carriage, and I think this thing is going to, this is real competition for us. And all the other guys around the boardroom are like, you are crazy, Sam. There is no way. Those things are spewing oil. They're unreliable. They scare horses. They cost a ton, right?
Okay.
What happened was that was history. That was changing. And those that were unable, the establishment that was unwilling to make a change, they ultimately died. Today, there aren't very many carriage companies. And if we look out the window of the studio here, we're not seeing a lot of carriages downstairs. But what you had at that same time were progressives. The Studebaker family, they were a carriage manufacturer. And they said, this horseless carriage thing, we think there might be something here. And they started producing horseless carriages, and they built their business there. Now, ultimately, Henry Ford came in with a game-changing idea that said, if I create this production line, I can mass produce automobiles instead of hand making each one in the same way. And he revolutionized the business and made the cost of vehicles come down, improve the quality, and the rest is history. So that's an example of the establishment in a disruptive change is reluctant to change.
Right.
In my world, the newspaper industry for a long time fought the internet. There were those that were progressive and started to buy into the online side of the world. I can tell you a story. When we used to be pitching media, we hired a lot of young people. And we had this guy, Charlie Fitzwilliam, who's now a business partner of mine. And he said, there's all these amazing blogs. And at the time, I was like, blogs, what are blogs? Yeah, I'm not really sure. And he was like, there are all these sites, and they do amazing stuff, and they highlight products. And so we got in really early with these sites like Mashable and Gear Patrol and Engadget that are the biggest taste-making sites of the day today.
Taste-making sites. I've not heard that term before.
So they're the places that everybody goes to find the latest, hottest products, the trends that are out there that are going to be the next hot thing. It's a place where your traditional media often goes to take cues for what should be in GQ magazine or those.
Okay.
And we got in really early with those guys, and it allowed us to be set up for great success now. But you had the establishment in those days. They're gone because they weren't willing to adapt.
Out, yeah.
But with the carriage makers, you had the progressives that adapted, and they went on and they had a nice business for a while. And then you had the game changers like Henry Ford. Today, an Elon Musk might be a game changer because he's looking at the need for new energy, alternative forms of energy. And he's producing solar, the Tesla brand, all of those. So he's an example of a game changer today. Another example that's a little bit more in our century. I'll update it. Is Blockbuster. We all remember going to Blockbuster Video, and the whole family would go, and we'd all scatter to our own sections, and everybody would get their VCR tape or their DVD, and we'd come back. Well, Blockbuster in 2004 was a $6 billion business, an absolute giant in the industry. At the time, this little company called Netflix came along and had a subscription approach. Well, in 2004, when they had $6 billion in revenue, Blockbuster, they had about 60,000 employees, 9,000 retail locations. So they were too big to fail, right?
You'd think.
But about $800 million of their $6 billion was in late fees. A huge portion of their profit was in penalizing their customers. Netflix came along and said, we're going to do a subscription deal. You take the movie, keep it as long as you want. When you send it back, we'll send you your next one. In 2004, at that time, the founders of Netflix went in and met with Blockbuster, and they said, hey, we'd like to come in. You guys can buy us for $50 million, and we will come in and run your online business. The guys in the boardroom, the establishment at Blockbuster, said, we don't need to spend this. We've got 9,000 retail locations. We're doing really well. 6 years later, Blockbuster's gone, and today Netflix is about a $7 billion company. Again, a disruptive change. At the time, if Blockbuster would have seen what was coming, they could have been progressive, brought in the guys, bought Netflix for a pittance, and been on the cutting edge and evolved. But instead, they kind of were the establishment and stuck with what they knew, and they now are part of history.
You know, you bring up some interesting points there. Those are great stories, too. But one is, for disruptive change, one is the ability to see that it's going on. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of examples of people that, while we can look back historically and say those buggy makers, a lot of them probably didn't even realize what was taking place. Right. So it isn't a matter of ignoring it. They just didn't even see it. And there's those of us walking around today that we're not seeing the disruptive change. Nobody's running around with a sign saying, look at me, I'm a disruptive change. So that's a challenge. The other is that, as you talk about the three sort of positions you can take, I can ignore it, I can be the establishment and sort of make a minor adjustment, or I can be a game changer and endorse it wholeheartedly. Those come with three different levels of risk.
Absolutely.
You know, so I've got to be, am I a gambler? Am I not a gambler? The other thing, and then I want you to comment on this, the other thing is that the time for disruptive change to run the cycle from being new to being easily available to everybody has shortened so dramatically. Mm-hmm. You talk about Blockbuster being gone in 6 years. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a blink of an eye.
It really is. It really is. In terms of identifying, it is hard. I mean, I think that for us in our world, I was in public relations, and during my time there, as part of the WPP family of brands, which is a large conglomerate of marketing agencies, we had an opportunity to work with Ford because J. Walter Thompson, who's a big ad agency, and it was a sister company to us, Ford had told them, we need you to bring us something different. And WPP realized, we've got to bring together the best and brightest from our various different marketing agencies to try and create programs that were truly integrated. And we did some amazing work for Ford and Allstate on some incredible programs. But at that time, when we were executing those, I was coming to the conclusion, we've got to nestle up and become a great resource to partner with ad agencies. Well, the disruptive change was already taking place. The internet was already available to the masses, and the traditional ad buying model was already changing. But I didn't recognize it then. It took me several more years, and now we've recognized it, and we've added the social media practice. We're creating our own content in a way competing with advertising agencies. We're putting in our own edit bay into our offices for that very nature. And then media who's media and who's not. Everybody with a mobile device is potential media. We're working more and more with influencers. We've got a media buying group that we work with that's found they're seeing a 50-to-1 return ratio when they're working with influencers on product sales. So sometimes you're late. Sometimes you don't see things when it's happening. One of our clients that I mentioned earlier, Icon Aircraft.
Yeah, that's an interesting story.
So the founder of that is a former F-16 pilot who was at Stanford grad school. And while they were at Stanford grad school, one of their projects, they were looking at disruptive changes. And there was a new ruling from the FAA. And the FAA for decades had been about dictating how you built an airplane, how you flew, really eliminating creativity because they thought is dangerous and you've got to have rules. And so the way that you created an airplane, how the instrument panel worked, where everything was in the cockpit had to be defined by these rules. But they looked at the number of pilots in the United States. And today, I think versus 10 years ago, we have half as many pilots.
Unbelievable.
It was 350,000. I think it's 175,000 now. And they said the number of pilots is shrinking dramatically. We need to figure out a way to draw more people in and make flying more accessible for people. So they created the light sport aircraft category, a disruptive change in the marketplace. And at the same time, they said, the barrier to get your pilot's license is less. You can, in about 20 to 30 hours of flight time, get your light sport license, which allows you to fly in good weather, in open space, during the day.
Okay.
And they also took some of the restrictions off manufacturing. And what it did was it allowed Kirk and his team to say, we're going to look at building an airplane in an entirely different way. And they brought in automotive designers. They brought in the best industrial designers. And they built an amphibious aircraft, lands on water, lands on land, for two people with the propeller in the back. So you have a huge canopy out front. And this plane is designed for low-level flying purely for recreational use. It is like a power sport in the third dimension of flying. And I was just up in Napa Valley at Lake Berryessa, and we had about four of these planes out and media flying them. There were houseboats, and we really created the environment that people would experience in flying the Icon. And the reporters come out, and their eyes are just huge because they've just experienced a visceral sensation that they have never experienced sitting in a giant tube in row 32D. You know, they've flown down and seen Napa Valley like they've never seen it. So Kirk and his team recognized a disruptive change, and they are revolutionizing the aviation industry to the point where they are the first company that has been able to, because these restrictions were taken off, create a spin-resistant airplane. The plane can go into a full stall and continue to fly because of this spin resistance that they've been able to create, which they never would have been able to under the old rules.
I mean, that's an exciting story. This is an individual. I mean, this is what bothers me about stories like that. And I listen to them and I go, well, that guy must be 25 feet tall and an absolute genius, you know, how to recognize it. What about me? How do I recognize a disruptive change? Let me ask you, does the desire to recognize disruptive change, the fact that you're a little sensitized to it, mm-hmm. is that influencing the type of people you're hiring?
Definitely. And we're going after entrepreneurs. I like to hire people that maybe one day will have their own agency and are going to try and learn everything they can from me before they go out and create their own deal. And what we're trying to create in our office is the opportunity, if you are entrepreneurial, you've got a path that you can stay with us forever, that we're going to feed that entrepreneurialism and you can be rewarded on it. But I think that who you hire dictates what your culture is. I think it's sometimes hard to say, we can hire anybody and get our culture, them to assimilate to our culture. I think you have to hire people that are cultural fits for you, or over time you're going to deteriorate. I think the other thing for each of us as we're identifying what a disruptive change might be is to really listen to everybody. don't think you have all the answers. I think that's what I see most of the time with entrepreneurs or people that have been successful. And I can go back to the guys who own the Owensboro Wagon Company, I'm sure. I'm sure they were making more money than they ever thought. And oh my gosh, we're richer than we ever thought we'd be by building wagons. I see a lot of entrepreneurs that are saying, I'm a $10 million business. I'm a $100 million business. I'm done. I've accomplished everything I can imagine. When the truth is, they should be a $100 million or a $1 billion business, but they're not listening or adapting to some of the changes that are taking place. What we try and do is listen to our youngest people. They're coming in. They've come from a whole different worldview than what I grew up in. And what are they saying is important? And how do we adapt to what they're doing and draw those in? So,
you know, I can remember back maybe 10 or 15 years now. For me, I used to go to Barnes & Noble at least once a month, a lot more often. But at least once a month, I'd go in there and I would buy 10 magazines that I had never read before. Weekly Knitting. You know, Ladies' Corner, Sewing for something. And I would take them and thumb through them, looking for something they were talking about in their field that it would, I would look at it and go, I can see where that would apply someplace else. You know, and I can remember reading a magazine about the ability to put these ID finders on the cow's ears so that the cattlemen could find where the cows were. They could see where they were on a computer screen, thinking, well, could you use that in manufacturing in some way? Of course, today, it is a standard. But, you know, the part of the problem today is the Internet's got so much information, I can't sort through it to find anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that the Internet is your Barnes & Noble today,
yeah,
and that people can go and they're searching stuff. They're on their phone constantly. That's why, luckily, we've got Mophie as a client, because they save the batteries for everybody as they burn through them. But I think that what you are doing is the sign of an entrepreneurial-minded person, is looking at something that's happening in another industry and saying, how can I apply it to mine? And I would think that most people that are in whatever should be looking at other industries and saying, how could we apply that over to what we're doing?
So, not just going to your own trade meetings. You got to get out there and go someplace new.
Absolutely. I think that you look at some of the most cutting-edge brands. I mean, Taco Bell here, or car companies and those that are spending money and forcing themselves to be on the cutting edge. A lot of times other industries are slower to adapt, and you can cherry pick and do something for the first time in your industry that hasn't been done, and you're still a rock star because you've brought it over.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned, you said, you know, you are lucky to have the clients you've got that allow you to be creative. What's the characteristic of those clients? What's the common characteristic? Because obviously not all clients are going to let you experiment, let you be creative with their money.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we do most of our work is B2C. You know, we're marketing to consumers.
Okay.
And consumers are getting more and more savvy. There are more and more options. I mean, it isn't just the 181 cable channels or the newspapers. It's endless on their mobile devices. So you need to be great at storytelling. Great storytelling cuts through all of the clutter. And our clients are looking for great stories. I just mentioned Mophie.
Right.
Quick example there. South by Southwest out of Austin, Texas, is companies spend millions of dollars at South by Southwest just to try and cut through the clutter, because it has got the early adopters, the influencers that are walking around there, and all of them are on their mobile devices, and all of them are sucking energy. They all run out of energy. And when that audience, that influencer, highly connected audience, is disconnected from their mobile device and their world, they feel like they're dying. We worked with the guys at Mophie to say, these people feel like they're dying. We can rescue them with Mophie power stations and cases. And we thought about, well, what's known for rescuing? St. Bernard's in the Swiss Alps, right?
Sure.
St. Bernard's, come and rescue the skier
with
or the
a
lost
drink.
Hiker.
With a drink. Let's get priorities straight.
So we did the same thing with St. Bernard's, but instead of having drinks, we had power stations in their barrels. And they could track these dogs. They could call for help at South by Southwest and, like Uber, track the dog coming to them and delivering their product.
You're kidding me.
And the cool thing was, at the same time the dogs were rescuing the people at South by Southwest, we were rescuing the dogs because we partnered with the St. Bernard Rescue Society, and all of the dogs that we used were up for adoption. So it was a win-win on both sides, but it cut through the clutter. It was a simple message, Mophie saves you. Right.
Yeah.
We had an iconic image with the dogs delivering the things, and people, we had celebrities tweeting, my power is low. Can you send a dog to New York or to Hollywood? Because they heard about this and it went so viral.
Wow. Okay. And we're back again with Todd Brooks of the Brand Amp. And we've covered, let's see, we've started with the horse and buggy industry. We went through that. We've talked about Blockbuster. We're through with them. We're now doing, we've talked about Icon, if you don't know about them, and their two-seater sport light plane. Influencers, taste marketing sites. I mean, wow. So, okay, so you're a consultant. You're a consulting firm. What is the, I'm a consulting firm as a coach. I mean, people hire me to help them with a specific problem. There is a large part of our economy that is really dependent upon consultants. What's the disruptive change that's taking place in that world in terms of how people find, retain, and use consultants? You're probably seeing it in your business. I'm probably seeing it in my business, but not recognizing it. What are your thoughts on that, Todd?
Well, as it relates to how my consulting is, it is critical that I am, or that we are, as cutting edge as possible. In the marketing world, everybody is looking for what's next. And so we have to, we can lose clients because we are not recommending or bringing to the table stuff that is creative or different enough. I remember we had been working with Nike for quite a long time, and we lost. One of the reasons why I have jumped on, or we've jumped on, the social media side and things so much is we lost to this agency at the time when social media was not what social media was, that they came in with these social media ideas. Nike, who's very progressive, said, we love this. They brought them in. We ultimately got ushered out. So as it relates to consultants and what I would be doing from a consulting standpoint, I encourage our clients to be fearless. Now, it doesn't mean to be reckless, but in the marketing world today, if you're not creative, if you're not bringing something new to the table, if you're telling the same story, maybe in a slightly different way, it's not interesting. And so we have a lot of people that I talk to that they kind of want to hold on to their job. I'm okay. I'm comfortable. I love being uncomfortable.
You're a risk taker.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've evolved into because I've seen what it does with different clients that we have, and that for you to take a substantial step forward, you've got to be willing to take a chance. And, you know, dreamers. I try and encourage people to be dreamers. We worked with Allstate many years ago. And the CMO there had just done an Olympic sponsorship, and he had a dream of reuniting the 1980 Olympic hockey team that had not been reunited since they won in Montreal.
Remember that.
And everybody told him it was impossible to do. He said, everything is possible. And we were able to reunite the 1980 Olympic hockey team at the NHL All-Star Game out here in L.A. And it was the only time in the history, and it's the only time it will ever be done because Herb Brooks has passed away. But take a risk. Go ahead.
Okay, so that's a unique point of view that you bring to your services. But I'm thinking a little more mundane. So, for instance, you know, how did people hire a consultant in the old days? The two martini lunch. You know, okay, you went to lunch, you talked, you had a drink, you know, you got comfortable. Today, I have clients asking me for proposals that I've never met. I'm never going to run into them. They're in a different state. where are they hearing about me? Where are they finding out? All of a sudden, the way in which you become known is so much different.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not buying ads. When I was in the building business, I spent millions of dollars. Well, I don't know if it was millions, but I spent a lot of money with LA Times. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to own the real estate section on the weekend to get people to come look at my houses. Today, builders don't do that. I don't think they even have a real estate section anymore. You know?
Well, I would say this. Word of mouth and doing great work is still the greatest reference that we have. And RFPs are a nightmare. I hate RFPs. sometimes you've got to do them, but we have lost RFPs for the craziest reasons.
Yeah.
So doing great work and having people go place and saying, look, you got to speak with Doug. This guy is amazing. He has changed my life. That is the greatest endorsement you can get. But if you're the establishment and you're still trying to buy ads in traditional ways and not taking advantage of LinkedIn, social media, writing your own blogs, doing all those things, you are missing the boat. There is a world out there and all of us are accessible through the internet. And so you've got to be optimizing. And that's where, you know, Charlie in our office and our social media team, they're constantly on the cutting edge and trying to ensure that we're being recognized.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, my impression, I mean, you and I have known each other for years, and I kind of knew what you did, but it wasn't until I started looking at some of your stuff on Instagram that I got really curious about, whoa, I didn't know that.
Right.
You know, prior to that, I just wrote you off as one of these sports guys.
Absolutely. But it also goes back to, and maybe a little bit different in your world than mine, but people aren't reading as much. They aren't spending as much time researching and whatnot. So video, being able to communicate what makes your service different than others in really 90 seconds or, you know, that type of thing is what gets you in the door. It buys you the opportunity to tell a deeper story.
You know, I'm amazed. I spent this morning listening to short podcasts that were sent to me by people who wanted to be interviewed on this radio show. Now, I mean, you go back 6-7 years ago when we started this, people didn't come to me to be on the radio show. Right. I went knocking on doors to get them to come on the radio show. Now, not only do they want to be on the show, but they're sending me a recording going, hey, I'll be okay. I won't embarrass you.
Right.
You know, listen to me and what I have to say. A whole different world.
Yeah.
A whole different world.
We use the analogy of when we're working with a startup company that we're rolling a giant boulder up a hill. And eventually it starts rolling down the other side and all those things. We worked on the Live Strong campaign. You talk about
I don't
how
know that.
Live Strong campaign with the yellow bands.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was Lance Armstrong. It was
right.
A while ago. But we started out in a three-month process or in a three-month period of time. The New York Times basically patted us on the head and said, we're not going to support your bake sale. To 3 months later, then presidential candidates John Kerry and George Bush both sent out official memos saying that they supported the Live Strong campaign and that they both were wearing the bands.
Wow.
We had clients calling us saying, I can't buy the bands. My daughters are demanding them. You've got to get me some of these things. But it is the power of kind of coming over in that tipping point.
If you were starting your business over today, what would you do different?
Guy, I would have to be so much younger than I am to start it over today. I would have to have more energy. What I would do differently, I probably would, I don't know that I would do anything different. I think
isn't that great?
Yeah.
What great answer.
We don't look back and say we missed the boat anywhere. We built our business, not methodically, but we built it on good work. We weren't rushing out trying to get really big, really fast. We said if we can work with somebody for 20 years, we've worked with DirecTV now for 18 years. We've worked with TaylorMade Golf for 15 years. If we can keep the clients we have and we don't have them falling off on the backside, that's the greatest thing. And we build these relationships that are more than just dollars and cents.
And, you know, that's where I think a lot of businesses miss the bet. I mean, some businesses are in a they offer a disposable service or product that you use it up and you're done with it. You don't need it again. But even like I'm sitting here looking at the water bottle, I mean, I'm going to finish this little water bottle, but I'm going to go buy water bottles, every week, Leslie comes home from Costco with another trunk full of water bottles, you know. So it's a matter of how do you keep those clients? I mean, I've got coaching clients that my coaching clients stay for 8-10 years or more, and yet I talk to new coaches and they go, well, is it a 6-month assignment? They aren't even thinking of keeping them that long.
Well, for us, we try and take the money portion of things out of the equation as quickly as possible. We came from a big agency world that was all based on hourly billing. And we had clients say, we love you guys. You did amazing on that launch. We now need to go another direction because I can't pay your fees. Every time I speak with you on the phone, I know I'm on the clock. And that's what we rejected. And we said, we're going to agree to financial terms based on what we think the scope of work is going to be. And we're not going to talk about that anymore. You're going to feel like we're your employee and we're in the boat with you and we're all working together towards the same goal. And we now have situations where clients come to us and say, look, I've been taking advantage of you guys. I need to pay you more. That is the greatest you can have. And that's probably what you have. You bring tremendous value to your clients that goes beyond just the dollars and cents in a transactional deal. You probably are developing a deep-rooted relationship with them where they have a circle of trust with you and your advice over time has paid off. And that's the ultimate.
Yeah, I think you're right. I started out on an hourly billing. I don't do that anymore.
Right.
You know, I want the freedom of putting in as much time as I think you as my client need without worrying about whether you paid for it or not.
Well, and the acquisition cost of a new client is way higher and way more painful, those RFPs, than keeping a client for a long time and making a little bit less over 15 years.
Okay. Well, look, we're close to running out of time here, so it's been a fast-paced conversation. Is there anything you wanted to share with the audience that you want to revisit or that we didn't get to?
Not really. I mean, if anything, it is whatever your business is, whatever you're doing, if you're good at what you do, put fear aside. We are so bound up by what might happen or what might negatively happen versus focusing on what the potential is. And that has been the most liberating thing, me going from a big agency world to working for another company, but opening up a West Coast practice for them to now being a business owner and seeing what all of the benefits are. Look, there's struggles and downsides and there's challenges, but the rewards are so great. And that was a risk I wouldn't have taken 15 years ago. So if you're confident in yourself, you know, trust yourself and you'll do great things.
So there you have it, folks. That's our speaker for today, Todd Brooks, motivational speaker. Once again, how do people get in touch with you, Todd?
Go to thebrandamp.com if you want, or feel free to call me anytime on my cell, 714-655-9505.
Okay. And thank you very much for being with us today. And I hope you know I was just teasing about your boring topic title. It certainly was not boring. It was very exciting.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Great to have you with us. Well, look, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. And while you're there, be sure to check our archives for other shows with some great guests. In fact, next week, our guest is going to be Bonnie Henderson talking about journaling for success. Bonnie's a life skills trainer for the District Attorney Office Diversion Program. She's also the founder of Girls with Goals, the fastest growing women's organization in California last year. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, HR professionals, just anybody interesting, send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, this is Doug Gefeller. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.